Good morning. I'm going to talk to you today about what we do at the Naval Postgraduate School, and we're going to talk about education, but the topic of the working group is real games, what the real games in education have to do with each other. Well, I'll explain. And as Colin pointed out, Rob Brooks is in the back. Fred Cameron, who many of the more experienced DSTL folks might remember from interactions with Canada, is also one of our contributors to this presentation. He's here in the UK, he'll be in tonight. So at the Naval Postgraduate School, we teach wargaming. It's an 11-week course. It's part of the operations research curriculum. We do have students from other curricula come into the course. And the way I teach it, kind of stealing a bit from Graham's presentation a little earlier, the Clausewitzian quote that he kind of mangled a little bit about wargaming being simple, but there's nothing simple in wargaming. I ascribe to that as well. When we teach wargaming at NPS, the first 6 weeks are spent teaching wargaming, and after that, the students are broken up into groups, and they're off working on a capstone project. Here's where the real comes in. The capstone project the students work on are actually for a DoD or defense partner sponsor. And what I found over the 7 years of teaching the wargaming course is that the students, their critique after the end of the course was, we need more time for the game development. So the way we've done this is for the first 5 weeks when we teach them about wargaming, on week two, which is after they've learned how to spell wargaming without the space, right, wargaming, week two, I introduce them to the real life DoD sponsor. So in weeks two through five, as they're still learning wargaming, they're also interacting with that sponsor, getting the very, very important problem definition down, stealing a technique from the Naval War College. I get the sponsors to sign an agreement with the student groups that are doing the wargaming for them, so we're clear on as to what we're going to deliver. And then after they take the wargaming apprentice certification exam, and when I tell the students this, and I mean it, if you can pass this exam, then you should be able to walk into your next unit. All of our students at the Naval Postgraduate School almost exclusively are military officers from all four of our services in the United States and from about 40 countries around the world. And I tell them, when you're done the wargaming apprentice certification exam, you should be able to walk into your next unit, put your hand up and say, yes, I can lead the effort for getting wargaming started and down the road. And in the course of my 7 years of teaching this course, we've done about 37 wargames. I checked the math last night, a little dodgy, but around 37. So I'm going to talk very quickly about several of the games that we've done. One of the games we did called Littoral Flotilla was kind of an international game, although it was done through the Sweden Saab Corporation with a CRADA with NPS. And we were looking at our littoral combat ship and how it might actually work alongside the Swedes' Visby Corvette. And the scenario in 2012 was an aggressive Russia decides to take Gotland Island from the Swedes, an amphibious operation. And how might a combined U.S.-Swedish team go ahead and combat that? Interesting real-life scenario. One of the game design lessons I learned that I pass on to my students now is there's no such thing as a simple spreadsheet model. The poor student that had to develop the spreadsheet, oh, all we're going to do is adjudicate, you know, distances and fire a couple of shots. Oh, can't we track fuel? Can't we track the... And the poor one student in charge of the spreadsheet model head was about to explode by the time this game was done. So lesson in game design there. There's no such thing as a simple spreadsheet model. Just recently, we started to have our defense analysis students, who are predominantly special operations students, take our course. And we created, we got sponsors from our special operations command to do that. So our special operations command based in Tampa, Florida, has an organization called J3I, their J3 operations staff section has an international component. They have several countries represented, many who are sitting here today, represented in their cell there. And so our look, unclassified game at hybrid warfare in the high north, where a lot of countries have equities to include the Baltic nations, obviously Russia, some NATO, some non-NATO. Interesting dynamics there. We had actually a Canadian special ops colonel as one of our players, and we tried the best we could not to involve a whole of NATO solution to get the game down the road, and I think that does kind of mirror real life in some respects. I have a lot of admiration for NATO. I was assigned over there as an Army officer, but hard organization sometimes to work through. We also followed up that, or had a another game for our special ops students looking at countering ISIL's flow of foreign fighters. And the task to us was, can we design a game to understand all the complexities to countering the flow of foreign fighters from any country into Syria? We were looking at predominantly at U.S. and what our policies were, and what actions can and can we not take. Posse Comitatus applies to us in the United States. We can't have uniformed military folks do anything in the U.S., but how do we interact with our FBI, State Department, et cetera, all the folks that are trying to coordinate and track people coming from the United States or other countries? We actually have an active duty FBI agent as one of the players. Students went out and got him. Great asset. I left that game feeling a lot more confident that we in the United States were able to kind of track what's going on. There's always going to be incidents, of course. We have a new concept in the United States Navy called distributed lethality. And the concept is this. We know that our multi-billion dollar aircraft carrier, that's the focus of our offensive firepower in the United States Navy, is very vulnerable. If you look in the South China Sea and the East China Sea, in the range of the Chinese DF-21 Foxtrot ballistic anti-ship cruise missiles coming in, those are problematic. So the idea is, can we project an offensive capability by putting some offensive firepower, distributing it on some of our other ships? And how is that perceived around the world? So these games, interestingly enough, didn't go to shooting matches. We're looking at what we call in the United States Phase 0 and Phase 1 operations, Phase 1 being deterrence. And the clever game design here was, we had closed planning, so the red and the blue cell would go and do their planning with some limited intel and draw out exactly where they're going to position their ships on overlays. We bring the overlays together in another room and all the players together and adjudicate that out and see how each side perceived the actions of the other side. The other innovative thing we did here, what we call red teaming, at least in our wargaming vernacular, is we want the red cell to be not only accurate as far as cultural, but we want them to actually know what blue's trying to do and break their concept. So the red team had forewarning and knew what distributed lethality was all about. No surprise, you can get distributed lethality in our open press. I'm sure the Chinese Naval War College is writing papers on it right now anyways. But we wanted that team to be as accurate as possible. And the interesting thing is, since we have international students, we had two Indonesian Navy officers on that team help us to understand the region much better. And one of the other key game design lessons I learned from this one is, in our play test, we actually had an Indonesian Navy commander and a Singaporean Navy commander opposing each other in the play test, and they were providing actionable insights and results much before we got to the real game. So you can learn things in a play test that are gonna be insights for your sponsor. Don't forget to have somebody sitting there taking notes. We followed that up with another distributed lethality game in the Eastern Mediterranean, because I had three Turkish officers on the team and we wanted to understand that region of the world better. And the scenario was real life Syria, and we're going to start lobbing in a NATO naval task force, lob Tomahawk missiles in there, and the Russians are going to threaten not to let us do that. And the question is, how could our distributed lethality concept there deter the Russians from stopping us from doing what we're doing? Now, in this course, I basically teach an analytic wargaming construct, and what I mean by that is that we build the game around a framework of getting data and information out of the game. This game was more of an educational or experiential game, and Rex, we used Aftershock. One of the things we do in the course is I've front-loaded all my lectures, so at night the students get to listen to me drone on and on over PowerPoint slides, but during our class time together, we basically do hands-on things. You can't learn wargaming without doing it. And so we do things like play games that are pertinent to the gaming project that they have. So we played Aftershock, we played Pandemic for this group to try and understand better how we might create a game, and the focus was creating a game for this 9th Mission Support Command, which is an Army unit based out of Pearl Harbor, and they're a reserve unit. So when they get activated, their mission's gonna be to go to a scene of a crisis, like American Samoa gets hit by a typhoon. You're gonna be defense support to civil authorities and help them get that island back operational. And none of the staff in that 9th Mission Support Command we're familiar with this, and the idea is to create a game so that they can become familiar with what that environment's going to be like if that eventuality happens. These two games, two different interesting games here. I'll talk about the U.S. Army Pacific one, very challenging game in that we were actually wargaming part of a real-life war plan, which creates all sorts of bureaucratic and administrative things. The game itself, we had to be read into a security program, and we had to conduct the game in a SCIF, a classified area. And the interesting thing in this game, we had General Brooks, the four-star general in command of U.S. Army Pacific, actually visited NPS, and we get to update him on his war game that my four students were doing. And then we actually got to send a student out to Hawaii to back brief on him on that. Again, interestingly enough as well, our focus here was on deterrence. It's like, how can we take actions in the Pacific to deter something from escalating from phase zero, phase one, into a phase two shooting war? And then the other game was one of the first games, the only two games I've had that I've actually deployed students to conduct the game other than the NPS campus. When we do our 11-week course, the 11th week, the game is conducted at NPS and the sponsors fly out to see the game. So if you want to be a sponsor, you can get a trip to Monterey that way. But in this case, the sponsor was down in San Diego and wanted to deploy the team down there. Well, I had three different games operating at the same time, and so I deployed the students down there without me there. So kind of an anxious dad allowing the baby to be born without me being present. And I did a great job. One of the innovative things about this game design, we wanted to compare this new concept called Undersea Constellation, a collection of technologies to help our communications underwater, unmanned underwater vehicles, et cetera. We wanted to understand how that affected the way you planned and how you could plan that concept of operations. So we did a with and without. The blue would play first without Undersea Constellation, and then with Undersea Constellation, the red wouldn't know what blue was playing with. But we tried to understand how we could avoid the bias of playing the game the first time, seeing red react. You're in the same environment, same scenario, you've learned something in the game. How do you get rid of that learning bias so your results, or your comparison results, aren't influenced by that? And the students came up with a brilliant idea. They played both games at once. The blue commander would play both sides at once. The red commander would respond both sides at once. And so you eliminated the learning bias. So I thought that was brilliant. The students thought about of that. I didn't think of it. The game we played on Monday or Tuesday reminded me of some games we did in 2012. And the idea was this. Our President of the United States, Barack Obama, and before George Bush said, the United States will not allow a mass atrocity to happen without responding. Of course, we've got no doctrine in the military in how we're going to respond, and we know full well if we're going to respond, it's going to be a military problem. And so the question was, how do we understand how we might respond to a mass atrocity? The first games we did were set in West Darfur, lots of different refugee problems, Janjaweed, bad guys going around hacking up refugees with machetes. How do you respond to that? And the game mechanics kind of revolved around, we can't stop it all. We can't stop the violence, but we've got to minimize it. And quite quickly, the press came into play, as we saw in the game on Tuesday, in that we're trying to, as the U.S., prevent a CNN event, a huge mass casualty. We're going to have to accept some casualties. How do we do that? So that was interesting. We did a reprise of that game. And we looked at the Abyei region between Sudan and South Sudan. And another thing I tell students never to do, they decided to create a computer software program. So Danny Hairline, the gentleman about in the middle of the picture, is a German army captain, put more than 100 hours into creating a computer program, and you can see the visual on the background, so that players could play in a human-in-the-loop game, but see on the screen exactly what was happening. It was a great construct, but I tell students, software solutions, be very careful about that. I did want to point out that we actually do games. I talked about DoD sponsors. We've done that. We've done games for DoD industry partners under certain restrictions, that is, cooperative research and development agreements with the Naval Postgraduate School. We have done games for international sponsors. The first game that we did, I kind of have a notional sponsor of our DoD Modeling and Simulation Coordination Office because it did the game for Taiwan. And we have a special relationship with Taiwan. We don't recognize Taiwan, the United States does not. It describes the One China policy in which Taiwan is part of mainland China, sort of, maybe. Although we do have a foreign military sales program with Taiwan, we provide them F-16 fighters. So it's a little bit paradoxical in how you kind of tap dance around that. I'm not allowed as a DOD representative to put a flag of the Republic of China on the slide, but I can talk about working with Taiwan. And so what we're trying to help them do, and this is an active project, is help them understand how they can get a live virtual constructive training solution. And we thought the first steps to understanding how this problem is to war game that. We did a game for the Norwegian Armed Forces in our defense analysis curriculum in our department there. We have a representative from the Norwegian Defense, Norwegian Ministry of Defense, and he asked us to look at hybrid threats. And I'm not going to talk in detail about what countries those might be. You can imagine what they might be. And we had an interesting game we did for the Royal Canadian Navy where we examined a very tactical game. And what you might notice is some of these games are very top level, operational to strategic in some instances. And this one's a very tactical level. Look at a visit aboard search and seizure party, boarding a vessel, and what if they didn't all have lethal weapons? What if some had non-lethal weapons? And the team I had working on this was an international team of one Pakistani naval officer and three Turkish naval officers. And it was fascinating to see them work together. And the Canadian sponsor we did this for, Dr. Peter DeBias out of Cora in Canada, actually wrote a paper that was co-authored by the student team and myself. And that was published for NATO. So that was a real rewarding kind of an outgrowth of that. I want to talk quickly about our basic analytic wargaming mobile training team courses. So I've taken the course that we do at NPS in 11 weeks and crunched it into 5 days, actually 4.5 days. So you might imagine it's a little bit of a haul. And what we do on day one is we have the sponsoring organization provide a sponsor for a game, and the students in the course, typically about 16 to 20 students, will have a war game that by the end of the week they're going to develop. So the course starts off kind of a mixture of some lectures about what wargaming is, hands-on exercises to start developing those pieces of the game that they're actually going to do that Friday morning for their organization. And we've done it now 6 times. There's a fair amount of people who still want the course calling me up. Happy to entertain those calls. I'll talk about where the games have been. So the very first one we did was in Canada. Let's see, oops, gotta do the build here. So Canada, and our colleague Fred Cameron is very proud of that. He got this started, actually. And Fred worked for many years with the ABCA Army program. It's an organization that coordinates the American, British, Canadian, Australian, and New Zealand armies. And they work collaboratively together to do research, interoperability studies, et cetera. And in fact, they actually came up with a structure we use for a data collection and management plan that we teach in the course. So our very first course was done in Canada. We had some courses that we did Kazakhstan. I got to deploy to Kazakhstan. That was an interesting experience. Talk a little bit about that. Lockheed Martin, our first course we did with industry, was a wargaming workshop, not exactly the same course. Fred deployed to New Zealand. There we get the New Zealand flag there and the American flag. STRATCOM we did, our strategic command. And what we're finding with our COCOM, strategic command, is that we've got some challenges as far as how the staff sections all interact and how they view analysts. So that can be a challenge when you talk about analytic wargaming. I got to go to Tajikistan, Fred and I. That was another interesting experience. The Indonesian Navy. The two Indonesian Navy students I had for distributed lethality were an outgrowth of this outreach. And when we did this course, the students in Indonesia called back to their NPS students and said, you need to take the wargaming course. So I had two Indonesian students show up on my door day one of the course and said they want to take the course. CENTCOM just did a course for them. They want us to come back and do a course at least annually, if not more often. Just did a course for the Marine Corps. And then in July, we went down to DST Group in Australia and did a course for them. DST Group is sort of the equivalent of DSTL to the Brits for the Australians. And Colin, I did want to point out now, so in the ABC logo, there's only one that's grayed out right now, and that's it's Britain. So So we'd love to come and do a course here if it's possible. The standard basic analytic wargaming course that we do, that we take on the road in 5 days, it's always adjusted as the sponsor needs, but we've done some very non-standard courses. The one we did in Kazakhstan was done using the peace support operations model. So I know Howard Bodie's here somewhere. Thank you, Howard, it was wonderful. They had a fictitious scenario we used, and it was great for a stimulation exercise to take a group of Kazakh officers and NCOs who had learned UN peacekeeping, and then see how well they learned it by putting them in an environment that we used POSSUM to do, and see how well they responded to different situations, how they deployed their forces, what they expected to see happen in that fictitious scenario, and then what POSSUM actually told them happened. And then we asked them to explain what the differences were, and that was fascinating as well. I told you Fred and I got to go to Tajikistan. The guy in the checkered shirt there was an officer, a Tajik, who had fought in Afghanistan in 1980 in the Soviet Army. So it's mind-boggling to me, 30 plus years after I retired from the Army, where I learned as a young lieutenant I was going to kill guys that wore uniforms that he wore, to actually be in the same room helping them learn things. We have had requests, and we are developing advanced wargaming courses. A lot of what our the requests have to do is that we find the sponsor wants to dive down deeper on some of the techniques we teach in our basic analytic wargaming course, and a lot of that has to do with how you track from the sponsor's objectives and issues all the way through to what are you actually going to collect for data in that game, and after you understand what that is, you understand how to build the game around the data structure and the information you're trying to get out of the game. And so most of the requests we've had are visualization techniques, but really focused on how do we build the game better, how do we translate the sponsor's objectives and issues into something tangible we can actually understand what the measurement space of that game is. And that concludes the formal portion of my presentation. In backup slides are all the games we've done. They're not gonna add up to 37 because we've done multiple games for the same sponsor on the same topic. You can reach myself, Rob Burks, and Fred. They're the phone numbers and contact information. Rob also has some trifolds out there that he will gladly give you until they run out, that talk about what we do both in the resident course and in the basic analytic wargaming course. And am I on time, Colin? Excellent. So thank you very much.